important thing.
Okay, what did Grandpa Herman do? When was he born, and in his boyhood and stuff like that? What do you know about his growing up?
Well, I don't know for sure. He was born in 1886, I think. And he was raised on a farm to start with, small farm, 28 acres. His father died at 45, so his mother had to, you know, take care of him and raise him. So when he got 15 years old, he had to learn a trade. Farm wasn't big enough. So he went to North Germany, clear up along the Danish border, and he learned creamery business.
That was when he was 15?
Mm-hmm, 15. And he stayed there for 2 years until he was 17 and joined the army.
Go ahead.
And he was, when he joined the army, he was a drummer in the army. That's all he did was drum. Then after he got out of the army, he went back home and run the farm for a while.
He was just in the army 2 years?
2 years, that's all he had to be. Then he run the farm for a while.
The family farm of 28 acres?
Mm-hmm.
What did they grow?
Everything, not much, little. And their house, and that what they lived in was all under one roof.
Like the animals and everything?
Mm-hmm,
the
all
barn
under one
and
roof. And they talked about these liquid manure pits. But they had that in there. Everything went in this one place. And they hauled all of that out with a team and a wagon. And then what they pumped it out with was a big tree. And they, you know, made a hole.
Hollowed it out.
And it had a plunger at the bottom, plunger on top. And then when they put it in the field, they had a board on the back of the wagon, on the barrel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you set that accordingly, how you want it. If you want it thick, you put it down low. You want it to scatter out more, you made it more flat.
Huh.
Took a bigger area. So he said that wasn't nothing new to him when it comes to this country, as he went through
he
all
knew
of that.
How to fertilize,
yeah,
then with manure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And after that, I guess they couldn't make it or something, and they sold the farm.
You know how old he was when they sold the farm?
No, I don't know how old he had been.
But they couldn't, it wasn't making
it wasn't enough to feed the whole family.
So how many children did they have?
I don't know, 8 or 9 in there, I guess, to start with. Some of them died from birth. I had one daughter, I think she was 13 years old, her one sister, and she was smart, too smart. She died at 13. Teachers said they couldn't teach her nothing anymore, and that she was too smart. But he thought she actually maybe had leukemia.
Leukemia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he thought maybe that's what it was. And then...
So she was younger than he was?
Well, she must have been a little older.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Then he took him, after they sold the farm, then he worked at a job with... They call a gut, or in Germany, it's a big estate, and he become a manager of a certain part of this estate, and which was handling the grain department. He was an overseer, foreman, or what it was, and that's where he stayed. And then,
where'd his family? I mean, where'd the mom and the kids stay?
Well,
I
don't know where they went. Maybe they didn't even sell the farm then, for sure. I don't know. Maybe he went to work first.
Yeah.
But then when he did that, Uncle Adolf was writing to a girl over, Gus Ranch was writing to a girl over in Germany.
Oh.
And
Uncle Adolf was over here?
No. Gus Ranch wrote to this.
But Gus Ranch had
wrote
moved
to this
over
niece.
Here.
Oh, he was here long before.
Yeah.
And so he wrote to this girl over in Germany about this big land opening, which was the Kincaid Act. And so they thought, oh my gosh, 640 acres, you was rich. And so Uncle Adolf, he come over in 1906 in November. And he got a Kincaid. He was drawn, you know, he got his Kincaid, which was in the McCoy range, open range. And it had a bunkhouse on it, which is up home yet, and had a windmill and tank. So that's where they stayed when they wasn't down. And Dad, in May 1907, he come to this country, and he come to Gus Ranch. He come to Big Springs first and took the mail and rode over to Gus Ranch.
In May of 1907?
Mm-hmm.
And how did Adolf, if he moved here in November, how did they live during the winter?
He went to Gus Ranch's too. Mm. That's where they ended up at Gus Ranch's.
He wouldn't have time to.
Oh, no, he didn't. No, but that bunkhouse was there then, mm-hmm. but they didn't use it. He lived at Gus Ranch's too. I think Paul more than Gus.
So they knew Gus Ranch over in Germany?
No. Just threw this right into his niece.
Right. Oh.
No, they didn't know him. But they knew the niece because Uncle Adolf was going with the niece, and she was going to come over. Mm. But she got cold feet and never come over. So, and when Dad come over, then of course he come to Gus Ranch's, and then they lived in, and they moved into this bunkhouse, what was Uncle Adolf's homestead. And it was, two Myers brothers, they took out two sections of homestead, but there was a prairie fire come, and it burned everything black. Whichever way you looked was black and sandy.
They were gone. They'd yeah. gone.
Well, they was. They had their wagons and everything there. They were going to homestead it.
I know, but I thought they were gone somewhere and came back and it was all black. No.
No, they were. No, they brought there. Their wagons and everything there, but. But they, I think the fire was before they got there, but they got there.
Oh, okay.
And then they took it, didn't like the looks of it, you know, it looked just where the wind blew the sand. And so they moved on, and there was a neighbor there who had a homestead, was named Emmer White. He lived just south there a little bit, and he was a notarizer, and he notarized the release. They released it. They notarized it, that he released it. And so, early the next morning, or when it was real early, he went over to Chapel, which was then Dual County, and he filed on a homestead, which had been 640 acres, but he took it out of both sections, took the best part out of each, but it had, he couldn't take a piece here and there. He had to join, and his homestead was in an L shape, like one went one way and one went the other. And you know, from then on.
So then they had two sections then? Your dad?
Yeah, Uncle Adolf had his section, which was in the McCoy place.
Well, and then your dad had.
But they couldn't hold it because it was open range. It was free to be held. But they did have to buy the bunkhouse and the windmill and the well, which cost him $600. And then that, of course, they lived in there, and then they started working on Dad's sawdust, mm-hmm. which he built a sawdust, and it had three rooms.
And that's right where Connie lives, or
Teresa's lives, right? The same spot where Teresa lives. And at one time, we had a bad storm come up. Hans Netsam was working there for us, and it blew the roof off of the one room. It was kind of a lean-to, you know. It was laying out in the yard the next morning. So that did care of that room. That took care of that room. Never re-put it up again.
Okay, let's stop and see if Dad, this part was.
Too bad you didn't think of that one.
Okay.
That's okay.
Well, when Hermann Lander come to North Platte from Germany, he come down with Ireland.
Yeah.
And that's where he started, hit the United States at. Never was sick, but he said most of them were sick on the ship. He come on the ship Bismarck, is what he come over on. And then he come on to North Platte. And he went to the Cody Hotel in Buffalo Bill, William Cody, shook his hand and welcomed to the United States.
Did he wish him luck. Did he come by train?
Mm-hmm.
From where? From New York?
Yeah. From Alzheimer's or wherever it's at. Yeah.
But it's out in the bay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that when
come to Bill, Big Springs.
Bill Cody had the Wild West show?
I suppose it was. Yeah, that Cody Hotel in North Carolina.
Yeah,
but remember, he took a Wild West show to Europe and performed.
But anyhow, he shook his hand and welcomed him to the country and wished him good luck. And there is one thing I forgot, maybe I ought to mention it. When he was going to come to this country, he went to the American consulate in Germany and they asked him where he's going to go. He told him and he said, you don't want to go there. He said, that's the great American desert, which was known at that time. And it didn't look good, but it's the way it was.
But that's where his brother was. So.
Yeah. And he rode, got a ride with the mail, the Gus Ranger, how he come to this.
From North Platte?
No, from Big Springs.
So did he bring the train then from North Platte to
Big
Springs?
So when he came, he rode with the mailman about once a week, you figure?
Well, maybe twice at the most, I'd say, maybe.
And then you said there was no Llewellyn.
There was no Llewellyn. Llewellyn was east, you know, down east where the Barons lived, you know, up along that
bank. Yeah, but was it called Llewellyn?
There was a homesteader out there by the name of Llewellyn. But McCoy's range, the railroad was going to go down where it is now. He laid out a plot. He plotted the town of Llewellyn.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's why they called McCoy the subdivision.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They moved the town up here.
Mm-hmm, because the railroad would have missed it down there, but here it hit it.
Okay.
He had that land. He owned that land all around Llewellyn.
He owned all of that along the fairground, all of that in there.
And so he laid out the
town in Llewellyn.
Okay.
And they didn't have a hotel. They all eat in the home, just like coming here. And he said, big table, and they just eat right in the home, the McCoys.
Okay. Then what? Grandpa didn't start farming or stuff right away, though, did he? Didn't he call freight or something?
He hauled freight, but they when they hauled freight, he did that not just during the farming time. They farmed along with it, but not much. Their first field, they plowed up 30 acres, which is on Uncle Adolph's place, and he plowed with a team of horses, made 2.5 acres a day, and Uncle Adolph come by with one of them planters and planted the corn.
By hand.
By hand. And it was broke. It was half on the other neighbor because there was no line. It wasn't surveyed. So they didn't know exactly where the line went. And then they wanted to make a little bit sure. So Gus Ranch was pretty smart. So they had the old survey, which was, you know, from up there this way, it was surveyed. Mm-hmm. So they started north, and Gus Ranch took a horse, and he counted the steps of the horse. They went out at night with a lantern and a compass, and they didn't miss that over. For them 2 miles, not over 30 feet at the most.
Oh, really?
From where the survey then come in. See, the new survey, or the survey for the Kincaid, only come in 1912. That's when they surveyed them sandhills. Mm-hmm. And they come in, the surveyors all stayed at Uncle Leo's place because he had water and whatnot.
Okay, then tell us about Grandpa Hall and freight then.
Okay, then Duke can buy him a team of horses. Didn't have money to pay for it, but he bought him a team and a wagon.
Was it a whole wagon or just the?
It was a lumber wagon.
Okay.
And it was bought from Roy Brown, and Roy Brown gave him a job so he could pay for his outfit for hauling lumber from Big Springs. So that's how he paid for his wagon, was hauling lumber. And he made 2 trips a week from Big Springs to haul lumber. They didn't use the wagon box. They took the box off and used the bolt version. You just sit on it going over, and coming home, you sit on the
lumber.
On the lumber. Mm-hmm. And it was chained on.
Now, is that what they used where was Roy Brown? Did he have a business in Llewellyn?
Yeah, lumberyard in Llewellyn.
But is that all there was there by then?
Well, it was all building up.
They were building, that's why.
Oh, yeah, old Carson McGarrett, you know where Berglund lives, and that was the hotel.
Yeah, or a rooming house.
Rooming house, and that's old Carson McGill built that.
Okay.
And then
Billy Rolfe had a store. And your dad brought some lumber over to build it?
And he put it in his lumber yard, and Roy Brown sold it to whoever wants it. You know?
I see. But that's why I thought that Grandpa hauled the freight that they used, or the lumber that they helped
that's
to
right. That's
build
all
the
settlers.
Town.
Yeah, so everyone who wanted, needed lumber. He probably had other ones, but he was one of them.
And then he used the team of horses the rest of the time for his farm.
The next other day maybe, or maybe they didn't have nothing to do with that. They probably worked it in. I don't know just how they might have did it. Then when he was freighting, he had a graphophone, and he always stopped over at Nash Hollow where Norma Claire at the schoolhouse there is where he stopped and played music for him over the, you know, when he that was about halfway, like. And
where did he get the gramophone?
Brought along.
From Germany?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He brought a barometer along, and it's still in use. He got it on his 18th birthday. He got a gift to him. It was a present. And still working just like always.
Well, then how do you meet your mom then?
Well, see, when the Kincaid, everyone could homestead, and people come from everywhere, all kinds of life, just anything, you know. And they took Uncle Bill, that was my brother, he come out, he heard about it, and he was kind of going to come up, you know, a big farmer, a rancher, whatever. But he didn't like it. He said there was nothing out here but sagebrush and jackrabbits.
And ritual men, or something about it.
But he said there was lots of eligible bachelors.
Oh, yeah. She wanted to get away from her mother, I think.
And so he went back and told Mom, and they got the writing together. But Mom didn't have a very good life. Her mother was awful strict. And she had a boyfriend back there, and the guy, both of his legs cut off in a train accident. Her dad was a railroader. And so she come out, and went back, and then eventually she come out and stayed.
Oh, she did come out though, and meet Grandpa first?
Oh, yeah. Her and her mother come out, meeting first.
Mm-hmm. But he wrote to her then.
Oh yeah, they wrote back in maybe a couple of years. I don't know.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. Yeah, no.
So when what year did they get married?
1913, 10th of December. And he said it was they went in their shirt sleeves. It was that warm.
Hmm. Where did you get married, at the courthouse?
With old Henry Tilgner. Had an old Model T, I guess, and that's where they went. I think Taylor had the Model T, kind of like a taxi service. And he took him up there, and old Henry Tilgner was the best man.
Oh, where did he take him? It was then Garden County, and the courthouse
must
was
have been
there.
Then. Yeah.
December 10th of
1930?
13, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, so, did they have just the sod house? Is that what they were living in?
That's,
or had Grandpa
that's,
built
that's
the...
That's all we had was the sod house.
When did they build the wood house?
When they built the other house? Never did. Bought that from Uncle Leo. So
oh.
Uncle Leo built that house.
Oh, so Grandma never did have just...
Uh-uh. We lived in a sod house till I was... Let's see, John Gordon was my teacher. I was in the fifth grade, so maybe 11 years old. I was 11 years old when we moved into that frame house up there.
Where'd your Uncle Adolph go then?
He sold out, and he sold it to he sold it to different people, bought it. And insurance, it ended up with an insurance company, Mm-hmm. And they come up home and wanted to sell it. It was rented quite a few years.
How come he didn't sell it to Grandpa? Grandpa couldn't afford it?
He wouldn't have money.
Oh.
God, no, he wouldn't have money. That time it brought, I think he got maybe $20 or $22 an acre at that mm-hmm. time.
Huh. Where'd he go then?
He went to Bethlehem, Oklahoma. First he invested all of his money in a silver mine, and it all went, it went broke. He did that.
Hmm.
Then he took and went to Bethlehem, Oklahoma, and he became the manager of a orphanage. And he was there a long time in this orphanage until he had some money gathered up. He went down to New Mexico and bought them mines.
Worthless
holes where you dig, just about dig for gold. And there was gold there, but they didn't have no water. All the water you had was from the rain that dropped off of the roof. Mm-hmm. Couldn't drill no well. That was in the Zicarilla Mountains down there.
Huh. So he never did marry?
He never married.
Tell about him.
What?
Tell about him.
Uncle Al?
Well.
Well, maybe there. Where are you going? Where are you starting now? Better tell.
Yeah, well, I got it. Ask her. Okay. I don't know.
Well, he's talking about going to school. Where'd you go to school?
Yeah, let's go into that.
You want to go to that now?
Yeah.
Well, I'll start when the earliest I can really remember. Was when my brother Carl was born. I remember the doctor being there, and that was Hooper. And then I remember the lady that was there. That was Mrs. Rogers, was her name. Mrs. Bill Rogers.
She came out to the house.
Mm-hmm. And he was born. I can still hear Mom yell, I guess they didn't think he was ever going to get him, but they finally did.
Mm.
Herman and I was out underneath the window. We couldn't look in, but we were trying to watch in, see what was going on. Yeah. And then the next thing I can remember, I was probably maybe four. And the windmill had too short a tower, so they had to let it down and add onto the tower.
Add legs on.
And I remember I had to pull it down, and I had some little blue pants on, and they kept falling down. Mom pinned them up for me somewhere or the other.
You were the oldest one?
Herman.
When were you born?
September the 15th, 1916.
1916. Mm-hmm. And Carl was born in what? Do you remember what year?
No, he was born in 31st of May and 20, I imagine. That'd be 4 years difference, I think. Uh-huh. I think that's when he was.
Okay. Okay, so when did you go to school?
Well, I started to school when I was 7 years old. Philip Samuelson was my first teacher. And I started probably in November to go to school.
How far was the school away?
Same distance, 3.5 miles. But we rode, first year we rode with Philip Samuelson, because he lived in that old house we got there, which was in Palmados, when it was rented. He lived at the rented mm-hmm. people's home. And so we rode with him. I remember one time we was going along, his door flew open, and I old Philip, he grabbed over and grabbed me like that, jerked me back in.
Well, you had a car?
Yeah, he had a dad. Had to sign for him to buy the car. Of course, he was teaching, and got the money. I didn't go to school very much. In the fall and summer and spring, we had to herd turkeys. That was every day. And every day, all the day, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, twice a day.
How long did you?
We herded them till the hoppers was no more. When the hoppers froze up and they died, so that let me go to school in the last of October, November, when I went to school.
During the day, you got to bring the turkeys back
in. We brought them back in, and a lot of times locked them up.
Your sister helped you, didn't
she? Irma. She helped me and her herding turkeys.
You was out all day long?
No, no. We just certain when they got full.
In the cooler parts of the day, right?
Yeah, then they come in and sit in the shade or something. And in the evening when they started to go, and when they started going again, then you round them up and took them off. When to start with, all we did is herded the hens. We kept the hens in a little bunch. You know, so just, and the turkeys, the other young ones, would all, they wouldn't go too far. But later on, they left the hens, then you had to herd the whole bunch.
Did you have trouble herding them? Or
oh, you don't know how we used to run. Especially if the wind was blowing sometimes. And we had an old black dog. He was a black shepherd dog. And he got bit by a rattlesnake. Of course, and then he died. And Irma and I buried him. Dad had a tarp. It wasn't really a tarp. It was a buggy cover. But it was like a canvas.
Uh-huh.
And we buried him. We buried him in that dog in that tarp. And Dad hunted Iowa for that tarp. He never did find it. He never did tell him.
You didn't even tell him after you grew up.
No, I didn't even tell him then.
You should have, yeah.
Yeah,
we should have had a good laugh.
But that dog helped you herd turkeys?
Oh, yeah. He found the snakes always. Turkeys found the snakes, and the dog would go and bark. You know. But he must have got too close, or he wanted to bite him.
When you were doing that, was there a lot of rattlesnakes out here then?
Well, you found some printed every day. Turkeys found them.
Oh.
And they made a circle. You know how they just pit for go around and make a circle. You run over and look what it was.
Did you ever lose any turkeys?
From a snake bite?
Or from,
not
wandering off or anything?
Yeah, the coyotes, if we didn't watch them close, the coyotes would get them.
Right, I mean, during the day and everything?
Well, the coyote didn't just kill one turkey. If they got a little bunch, it run off, 10 or 12 or 15.
Yeah.
Coyote got into them, he'd
kill them all.
Well, maybe not all, maybe some got away, but he'd kill his share. You'd see him where they was laying.
So what'd you the worst do then? Thing. I mean, if that happened, what would you do?
Pick them up?
Take them home?
And I suppose Mom fried them. Uh-huh. Yeah. But that's the reason we had to watch so close. It was a drudgery.
How far away from the house did they roam?
Oh, they'd roam, I suppose, a mile, 2 miles,
really?
maybe longer.
Huh.
Just out on in the prairie.
Mm-hmm. If there was a wind blowing, you know, the hoppers go like that. They just keep going like that.
Did you have a hard time getting them to come back?
Yeah, that's when your legs was handy. Had a switch, you know, and you'd switch them inside it. One time we was herding turkeys. We got him north, all right. We was going north, and I can still take you to the valley it was in. Mom and Dad Connie then, that was the youngest brother, you know. And it was, then we got turning, and they headed south in the wind, and we couldn't stop them. And she laid Connie down, and we had a heck of a time finding him.
Oh, no.
So she was yelling, she was screaming, but we did get the turkeys around, and I said, and it was in this over a hill in this valley, so we laid him down, and we went over another hill. There was another valley, and then over another one, and she thought it was in that valley, but we already had went over to another valley.
Oh, no.
We found him laying there on the ground.
Well, she's lucky, because if coyotes would have attacked turkeys, why wouldn't they attack
well,
babies?
Well, they wouldn't. The coyotes wouldn't have been around if you were around.
Excellent.
No. Well, she was scared. We was all scared, but we did. I don't know if we had all the turkeys in. They might have got away eventually, but oh, did we run. Yeah, that was a day, that was a job. And then in the, when you cleaned them in the winter, then you had to.
So how'd you keep them then? Did you have, they freeze? I mean, how'd you keep them from spoiling?
The turkeys?
Yeah, or did you not clean them all at once?
Oh, we picked maybe 30, 40, or 50 at a time.
Well, how many turkeys did you raise?
Oh, 100, 150, maybe.
And that was one of your staple things, or did you sell them?
Oh, we sold them, had to pick them all. And they went to Jerpy's in Omaha, or to Peter Fox Brothers, and I'll have to tell you about the Peter Fox Brothers then.
Peter Fox? Peter.
Peter Fox Brothers.
Uh-huh.
and they was a big
packing plant.
Yeah, big. Well, they sell them in Chicago, uh-huh. you know, uh-huh. retail place.
Retail.
Well, anyhow, I don't know where I'm at now. But anyhow, we got done with the turkeys. Well, the butchering time comes. So you hung them up by their feet, you know.
And yeah. Cut slipped their throat.
Yeah, cut inside your mouth and poked them up in the brain. Cut across like that and you cut the vein, blood vessels, and you poke it up in the brain.
What does that do?
Well, that kills them. That keeps them. They don't feel nothing anymore and they loosen the feathers up.
Oh,
feathers all just kind of, you know, and you pick them all out. Huh. And then after days picking, and usually let them hang till they cool pretty well, and they take them in the house and pin them. And so on the night, on the table, you pin them.
Did you?
And lay them in
the... When did you clean the guts out when you...
Never did.
Oh.
Never did. You just...
They put it where it's cold.
Never cut the head off, never cut the legs off.
Oh.
You wrap paper around the legs and paper around the head. And the apples used to come in big apple barrels.
Yeah.
Packed them in the apple barrels, and on top was a gunny sack. Put it on there and then put the hoop down on it and tacked it down.
Mm-hmm.
And then had the tag on the side where they went to them. Mm-hmm. Hold them to down the wagon and took them down here to the old station down there. And loaded them on there, and then they loaded them on to them.
Oh, but how'd they spoil? Yeah, that's what I
don't
know. It was cold enough when
they did
it.
Always in the winter.
I see.
Yeah, no, they didn't spoil. And it was...
But they took the guts out then when they got wherever they were going?
I think they sold them. They just sold them like that at that time. I think
you had the guts inside?
Yeah, just like a chicken. I don't think they cleaned them there. I don't think you could have probably. No, I think they just sold them. At least I'm sure they did. They just sold them away, hung them up right and sold them in the butcher shop.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. No,
what was this Peter Brothers?
Peter Fox Brothers was a big commission.
Oh, and so that's where yours went then?
Well, part of the time they went there and part of the time to Jerpy. Jerpy was in Omaha and Peter Fox was in Chicago.
Oh.
Peter Fox paid a little more, but you had more freight.
Yeah.
So it just depends what you do.
Well, one time he was out here, weren't they?
Yeah, one time one of the Peter Fox brothers was out. I don't know which one. He had a big old fancy car at that time. And he was in the yard, just right there. And I was out there. And this here car drove in, two guys in it, and asked me who that was. I said, oh, that's one of the Peter Fox brothers in Chicago. And what did they want? Well, they wanted to see if Dad would buy turkeys for them. But it didn't materialize, because I don't know why. And it was the sheriff and his deputy. And Dad made wine always. Had spirits there. And his good neighbor, George Scammell, turned him in. And they was going to come and raid, arrest him or whatever they was going to do. Well, did he sell it? No, it was just for his own. So they didn't, turned around, drove out. And here, a while later, I don't know how long, maybe a year, half a year. Scammell was a good friend of Weedman's. Of course, the folks was a good friend to all of them.
Uh-huh.
But he was good. And they had a falling out. I don't know what happened. So Mr. Weedman come and told Dad, you know who turned you in for making that wine? He said, well, Dad didn't know. He said, well, it's George Scammell. So the road come right through the place. Over the Camel place, and right by our house. And one time they was going in there, and Dad said, hey, George, I want to talk to you. He says, you made an awful mistake when you said that was the raisin wine I made. It was the best doggone rhubarb wine you ever had. And he said, he slapped the horses like that, and the old spring wagon had a seat up above, he said, and she flew over the top. I can still see her come over the top in the back of the spring wagon. Her legs sticking up there. I don't know what you had on. I remember seeing the white part.
What did you think he had underwear on?
I guess some kind of bloomers or something.
No doubt, that's what they wore.
Oh, it was so funny.
But anyway, George knew that Grandpa knew.
Well, sure,
he just wanted him.
But they become friends again afterwards, It was like one time when I was little, I always went a lot of times I went dad when he mowed hay. We were out the school section, or wherever it was at, and I'd sail out of the wagon while he was mowing hay. We was out there mowing hay one time, and I seen this big old cloud coming up, like, you know, what's going to be a gully washer? Well, here come another wagon by. This road's going wherever. At that time, you went where you wanted to go.
Right.
There was no fences.
Right.
You just went. So they talked a while, and finally, well, the cloud looks pretty bad. We better go. Oh, Dad, I'm hitched off the moor, I'm hitched on the spring wagon. This other fella, he went toward the east. And next morning, it didn't rain, not a drop, or maybe a couple drops. And the next morning, Dad went out the moor. Okay, got out there, didn't have no gears in his moor. His gears was all gone out of his moor. Well, this guy was going east, he thought it was going to go a big rain, and washed, did away with all the tracks, but then it didn't rain. So here comes Dad in. The horses, oh, they was just wet with sweat, and the lather was running on them. So he told us kids, run out and get another team. So we went out on foot, you know, Irma and I, and we brought in the team of horses. He hitched them up and headed over and picked up George Scammell, which is where Rittenhouse was.
Oh.
And he went on around. The TL,
the old TL place up there?
That's where George Scammell lived. And he went on around toward the cemetery, that place there. That was a fellow by the name of Claude Smith, Durham place, but Claude Smith lived there. Picked him up. Then he went on around, kind of around, a little more toward the north, picked up old Bill Weedman. And then he had to make another circle into the school section. It was only about a half a mile from where he was haying. Well, here the tracks was. Followed the tracks, and they followed the tracks. And they followed them over to where the wagon was sitting with the gears in it, yes. It was old Charlie Lynch. That was Mrs. Dorman's granddad, who that was.
Yeah. That's such a good job. I told Aaron, he really got the crud of the bunch.
And then when Dad got home, Mom and they were talking, you know, Mom said, don't prosecute him. I can hear it as plain as now. She said, he's poor and he needs them. You got your gears back. He said, and the old Charlie Lynch, he left, but I don't think that's the reason he left. He just pulled out one day and just left everything.
Her and the family.
Leave her and
oh,
the family.
Oh, left her and the family. Mm-hmm. Oh, you ought to see her.
Yeah, he did.
If you ever saw a witch.
Well, she was, they was poor, there was
okay,
no doubt.
But
and Bertha Benson said she, if they come up, they lived right by Brooks Place.
Did he?
And they'd steal, just, she'd steal right out of you and write anything. Then she said she didn't have new sport, she'd even bring it back then.
Okay, even had guts enough to take it back to her because she didn't need it anymore.
Yeah. But funny thing, and another thing, well, maybe it's interesting. There was a neighbor, it was open range yet, and there was a family by the name of Boyer lived just a half a mile east of Uncle Leto, no, west of Uncle Leto, just a little ways. And they lived in a tent in the covered wagon. It was old Frank Boyer, and he had a wife, but she was just a young girl, real young, a lot younger than him. But there's another young fellow living with him too. You know, if it's Boyer's, some of Boyer's relations, whoever. And every night, or every evening, not every evening, but every so often, they had a little team of mules and a spring wagon. They had the big wagon with the covered wagon and the spring wagon. They'd take off at night. And they was making the grade of the railroad in there, then the railroad was coming in. And they had these railroad ties laying on, you know, big piles where they dumped them on. And they stole them. And they sold them to whoever wanted them. Daddy had some of them. I see them in the windmill. They used them for a windmill. And they split them for fence posts. And by gosh, one nice day, Dad said, here come this whole bunch of people from Llewellyn, the big shots, McCoy, and, you know, upper ones. And they give old Frank Boyer 24 hours to get out of the country. Well, that's what happened to old Frank Boyer. He had to get out. He had this stove. We call it Frank Boyer's three-legged stove. That's the one Mom and Dad used all the time in the house. And he bought it for $6. And they loaded what they could, and they went off. They went as far as in Garden County, I guess. It must have been still in Garden County. And took a homestead up there. And not too many years later, well, he come up missing. Well, he took off. Old Frank Borders took off. He had this little team of mules. There was a sandy spot there, and they rolled. You know, a horse will roll.
Uh-huh.
Rolled in the sandy spot all the time. Mrs. Boyer, it got to her, so she confessed, and they killed old Frank Boyer and buried him there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the paper, not too awful, oh, a year or so ago, Merle Brown, where they went up and dug up his bones.
Huh.
They had him up in the courthouse. And the funny part of it, you know, Jack asked him, he knew Mrs. Boyer. They lived not too awful far away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Boyer.
Because he's from Alliance or something.
Mm-hmm. But it was some way, yeah, he knew.
So when did that open range come no more?
As soon as the homestead. As soon as there's homestead, you could just go in and take it.
What year was that?
Well, it must have been 1906 when the homestead came in. It wasn't the homestead, it was the Kincaid. The
okay,
homestead.
As soon as the Kincaid
opened up, the homestead, the open range disappeared. They had to do something.
So then people start putting in fences.
Yeah, what they could, or just, yeah, just lived there to start with. Some of them just maybe built a little. They had to build $500 worth of improvements, which wasn't much, you know.
When did you have to help put in fence around your pasture?
I never did. But the old petition fence, or the what they called, it was between Delators, called the drift fence, between Delators and McCoy's. I remember some of the posts that broke off and was there. There was no line, so they just went toward the east, went east as far as George Williams' place, and it went down to Blue Creek there. I don't know, somewhere down on Blue Creek where it shut. This side was McCoy's.
Just one long?
This long, crooked fence that just went, you know, maybe two wires and a post here and there.
So that the cows wouldn't drift.
And that's where these cowboys rode this fence back and forth, you know, and they had this bunkhouse. Well, the McCoy bunkhouse is part of a bunkhouse, and the one sitting up there is a bunkhouse.
Hmm.
They call it a line shack. What they call it, and it's still up there.
Okay, now, you went to school, but you didn't get to go very much because you heard sheep, or turkey. But, okay, you started when you were probably 7 years old. Now, did you ever graduate from eighth grade, or what did you do?
I went 8 years to school. I never had a buddy in my class. There's always
the only one.
The only one. And if I missed, it didn't matter what I missed, because I'd just start over where I was at and take a bunch of pages. So, yeah, I graduated every year. Not too good, but I did graduate. And I graduated out of the eighth grade.
Did you have to take a test then?
Oh, gosh, yeah. You had a lot of subjects at that time.
No, I meant, did you have to take a test to test out of the eighth grade?
Oh, yeah. That you do. You had to go quite a way. I had to come from the Welland once, and I had to go up to that other school once. And, yeah, we had to. A lot of them didn't pass.
A lot of them did pass.
Was you able to read pretty good?
Not very good. I never could. I never knew my ABCs for a long time. I sat down, Mom sat down every night with me, and we read my lesson over. Reading was my worst part. We'd go through it a couple times, and I could do it the next day.
So when did your dad learn English?
He learned English, oh, right away, kind of. He just bought papers and magazines, and he said he studied under the pictures. If there's a picture, he could kind of, you know, it helped him. And he had these German people that helped him. Actually, Uncle Adolf went to the university over in Germany, but he was no better than Dad, because they learned the old English, and of course that was different.
So did you talk mainly German or mainly English in your home?
Well, we talked mostly English, but the folks talked lots of German. When we went first to school, we talked too much German. It was way too much. And we got a lot of razz, and you know, it didn't take long. That's the reason right to this day, you know, German's the same as English, as I learned it from little on.
Mm-hmm. What about Grandma? You said then she came out, but what was she doing in?
She was a
interpreter.
She was worked. She was a stenographer in a bank in Pittsburgh, and an interpreter. She had a good job, very good job. But like I said, I don't think her and her mother got along that good.
Was her name Adam or Adams?
It was Adam to start with, and everyone called them the Adamses, so they added an S.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
She had a sister and a brother, two brothers. And there was two girls and two boys.
Okay.
Aunt Lucy, she got to be a spiritualist. I don't think you need to put that in, maybe, but she did, and she got fanatic.
Did you ever know her?
I've seen her one time, and our youngest brother, that was Chris, he had a heart attack at 27 years old and died. And the oldest brother then, he didn't marry till way late, don't want to come out. And he married, you never knew him, but he married, and he had two boys, so I got two cousins.
Was that Herbert?
No,
or no,
that was
Adam. Oh, Grandma, yeah.
Yeah, Grandma's brother.
And,
but we was back there one time and seen one of them, Blair. He's dead too, isn't he? Or is he?
Oh, that's me. I don't know.
I don't know. What?
Never did hear.
No, his wife.